listening to Raven's Eye Radio on this Tuesday morning. That, of course, in the background is Where the River Flows by Collective Soul. Really, really love using that opening drum beat for our show. Really gives it a good energy, I think, to what we have today. As you know, today is part two of our two-part series on the pro-life, pro-choice debate in Canada. It's about, I think, 27 minutes left to go through. And, of course, this will appear unedited on the website, www.ravenseyeradio.com, where you can also send us an email. Send us your opinion on what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. Let's get right into it, okay? You're listening to CKCU 93.1. This is Raven's Eye Radio. I have to agree with you on that, because as much as I am an advocate for pro-choice, for the reasons I listed earlier, I am personally, let's go back to the example earlier, if I were to get somebody pregnant, be it my girlfriend or whoever, I would not want them to go through with an abortion personally, because it's not that I consider it a life or anything. I know the harm that an abortion can cause physically and mentally. And so in that sense, I would never encourage someone to get an abortion. But like you said, you need to build those links of community. You need to build up the worth of a woman in society, and we have done nothing to do that in this day and age. And the other issue is, as much as you can talk and console and counsel someone on what the right decision is, in the end, it's their decision. And to make abortion illegal would be taking away their right to choose.
You know, if I can just add to that, the where the empowerment portion comes into that is having that control, especially over your body, which a lot of women do not have. And that's what has led them to be in that position in the first place.
Well, yeah, there's a very, very small minority where there's a lack of control leading to unwanted pregnancies.
I don't just mean rape. I mean just control over one's body has various factors coming into it. So I don't just mean in terms of like physical, you know, physically being forced. There are other things that come into play.
Sure, and I just don't ever see how abortion's going to enhance that control. I just watched, this is totally, let's take things down a notch. I just watched Ides of March. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie at all.
With Clooney and Gosling?
It's a political thriller.
I've been wanting to see that.
Yeah, okay, it's really well done so far as political thrillers go. I thought it was really interesting. But the center point, you have a young woman who... now it's going to be a spoiler for people who want to see it.
We'll just spoiler alert
spoiler
ahead.
Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. But you have a young woman who has sex with a potential presidential candidate, and he gets her pregnant, she gets pregnant, and you watch as nobody here in this room, all people of goodwill, would say that this was the picture of empowerment, because the young woman does ask for money for an abortion, but she kind of then is surrounded by a bunch of men who are basically saying, holy crap, we can't have this happen in the campaign. And so they circle in, and they definitely provide that money. Let me say they are very rapid. They get the money and drop her off at the clinic. But typical, this happened to some people, a friend of mine personally, dropped off at the clinic, nobody there to pick her up. Problem solved, and off she goes. So it's just a super sad situation, and you can still see the movie because the best part of the spoiling is after we didn't spoil the best part.
Yeah. I agree with you again. I mean, it's about education. It really comes down to teaching people about their own self-worth. And when you have shows on TV like The Bachelor, or Jersey Shore, or any number of these reality shows where the women are the butt end of the jokes, and it's just they do what they want, live how they want, and there's no consequences associated with what they're doing, then you have, that's where these issues come in, because this is what influences teenagers, sometimes more than their parents, especially if their parents aren't willing to talk to them about these kinds of issues. We're getting more, and like I said, between you, Giselle, and I think basically we agree fundamentally that abortion is never the first solution, and it's...
Except that it is. Look at our abortion.
Well, no, it should never be considered the first solution. It should never be...
We all agree. Everyone agrees. Abortion's not great. It's not the first solution. And then you look at our abortion rates and you know that it is.
But our abortion rates have been dropping since 2005.
1 in 4 pregnancies is an atrocious abortion rate for something that was meant to be a last resort.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I am not disagreeing with you on the rate. But the rates have been dropping. Now, why have they been dropping? Is it because...
Why do you want them to drop?
I want them to drop because...
Why do you care?
What do you mean, why do I care?
Why? That's not me trying to be adversarial, although it is. But why do you care that they drop?
Why do I want the abortion rate to drop?
Yeah.
Because, like I've been saying, I don't think abortion is the best idea.
Why not?
Because it's not a good solution. It's mentally and it is physically exhausting for women. And
I hate to play your role here, Giselle, but of course, bearing a child and raising one is mentally and physically exhausting, too.
Understandably. But at the end of that, you have a child. At the end of that...
Bingo. So why are we making this...
Because sometimes
solution? People
aren't ready. Sometimes people aren't ready for that.
Nobody on this side is saying they have to parent. Nobody's saying they have to parent.
The problem with the pro-life side of it is that they want to see abortion done away with legally.
No,
and that's what we're
what
talking about.
You invited the wrong girl to defend that position.
Well, no, that's... I think that's why...
I want every woman to be considering this in their heart. I don't think Father Tim is going to necessarily say the law. What is legal is not moral. What is moral is not always legal. But I'll stop talking for a second.
Why don't we hear from Father Tim then?
Well, the heart of the debate is the status of the unborn child. If the unborn child is a human being, which we believe he or she is from the moment of conception, even genetically speaking, then it is murder, and we need to do whatever is possible to prevent these murders, which include supporting these women, as we've already discussed. So
that's not Father Tim. I just want to jump in and contradict my... I suppose he's supposed to be my partner.
No, it's just...
That's not a belief. That's the science of it. This is not a Catholic belief, a Christian belief, Hindu belief, whatever belief. That is the science of it, that you have the genetic material of a new human being, a life, when conception occurs. Nobody disputes that. You're not going to find any medical student on this campus to dispute that.
Well, no. No one's going to dispute that you have the genetic material, but it comes down to at what point is that genetic material capable enough to actually be considered a life that can survive on its own. Like, it depends on how you define a life. If you define a life as something with a heartbeat, beat, and brain function, then that doesn't happen until 8 to 12 weeks into the pregnancy.
And I know you want to stay away from the legal aspect, but I mean, how you want to define a life for yourself, again, that's up to you, but when it does have legal implications, it's a...
How we
issue,
define life
know?
Is not a legal question.
No, but it is.
Fundamentally.
But it has legal consequences.
Exactly.
If you define a life as being an unborn child, if you say 3 weeks into pregnancy, okay?
Well, let's say the embryo. Let's say the embryo.
Fine, let's say the embryo. If you define a life as being the embryo, okay? And then let's say you get into a car accident.
Four of us embryos sitting around here. That's what we all were.
Yeah. Well, let's say you get into a car accident with a woman who's carrying an embryo.
Right.
Okay? And now... the woman doesn't die, but the embryo dies because the airbag is deployed.
Right. And
okay?
That woman, if it was a wanted child, she will mourn that, I assure you.
I'm not saying she won't mourn it. And I'm not saying wanted, unwanted, either way. If that embryo is defined as a life, then the person who hit that woman can be charged with manslaughter, accidental death. Do you think that's right?
Well, I don't know whether anybody in the accidental case of having a car accident is charged with manslaughter. But putting that aside, this is the question, and we are getting right into it here, which I'm very pleased about. And that is whether you say at 8 weeks or 12 weeks, are you comfortable with third trimester abortions? We have a situation in Canada today where everything hinges on what the woman wants. And no thought or consideration is given to what we are doing in the act of abortion. And when you consider then that you have this, and I'm happy to be extreme on this. The embryo is what we all started out as. Sometimes there's miscarriage. Sometimes there's all kinds of things that happen. And we know that is the case. But the ultimate question we're grappling with here is, how is it that we treat those who are voiceless, those who have no voice in our society? And ultimately, you can be a person, you can advocate for the for people with varying degrees of abilities. You can be a disability rights activist. You can be an activist for the homeless who also have not as much of a voice in our society. I am an activist for the unborn who do not get a voice. We all started out this way. Nobody ever stops and considers what that means. And my point here today is that it is not adversarial between the woman and the unborn, that when a woman serves the unborn child well, she thereby serves herself well. And we do not want to live in a culture where we have the powerful stomping all over the powerless. And that's what we have currently today in Canada with regards to abortion in law and in culture.
Then what do you say to women out there who have been raped or who have a pregnancy that is causing them immense medical trauma?
I say this, that I definitely feel like this is a horrifying circumstance, and I definitely think that rape is the, I think it's one of the greatest crimes that can be committed. And to come out of that and be faced with a pregnancy, the reality is that's probably going to, and I don't want to speak for anybody who's been raped, and I can't do that, so I want to be really cautious. But it's going to be a traumatic event for a whole lifetime. But there are, whenever my opponents bring up rape as the exception on the abortion, I say, why is it then that that is the solution? And the reason why we consider the solution is because fundamentally we don't think abortion is all that bad. But I say to you today that I wouldn't come to a rape victim and assault her again. And that's how I consider abortion. It is a crime. It is something that is violent. It is something that dismembers a child. It is something that distances the woman from herself even further again. There are rape victims who carry their children, who bear them. And there's campaigns out there, and I don't want to get cheesy, but they put the faces up of these people who were born as a result of rape and say, well, what about them? Don't they matter? And the thing is that life is, it's a horrible circumstance and it's a horrible situation. But I repeat, and not wanting to be callous and not wanting to put words in the mouth of somebody who has experienced that, but that there has to be a better solution than abortion.
But what you're advocating is that for 9 months, while this woman is carrying this child, she is reminded of the incident that got her there. It's bad enough that she's, if she doesn't get pregnant, that she's going to have a trauma that she has to deal with the rest of her life. Now she's dealing with a child that came from that trauma. She's constantly reminded of that trauma, of that physical violation against her. And for you to sit there and say, well, that just shit happens, it to me it's just kind of saying, oh, well.
If I could comment on that, that would be, it's tremendous heroism for these women who've been raped to suffer that.
It is, that reminder. And I am not talking down to women who have carried a pregnancy through term, who have been raped. It, you know, more power to them. That is extremely courageous on their part.
I think of one woman named Rebecca Kiesling. She has a book out, Conceived in Rape, and she travels and gives pro-life talks because she was conceived in rape. And she's a beautiful woman. I think she's a lawyer. She has children of her own. And she's grateful that her mother was heroic and willing to suffer the reminder that she was raped in order to bring this beautiful child into the world. So we're not denying it's heroic, but we're saying that it's still murder to kill that unborn child.
And I really don't appreciate you putting words into my mouth to say that I somehow say, oh, tougho, sucks, but you got to do that. Obviously, I am familiar with this. Anybody who discusses abortion is going to be familiar with some of the animosity that comes in quite quickly. But there's this sentiment out there in the media, and I'm not blaming you necessarily, and I'm not trying to be hard on you, but there's this sentiment out there that if you're pro-life, you basically are just saying to women, suck it up, buttercup, I don't care, whatever. And I read that all the time, and then I see the people on the ground who I know who are passionately pro-life, and they are adopting children with special needs, and they are trying to give their money for young mothers who need help, and they're supporting crisis pregnancy centers. And for the thanks for that, you get abortion rights activists trying to shut down the crisis pregnancy centers, which are virtually one of the only places I'm aware of where if on Carleton University today somebody's listening and they are pregnant and they don't know where to go, there's a place called First Place Options on Bank Street, and they can go there and they can say, I'm stuck and I don't know what to do. There's so few places to be able to do that where you have a focus that is on preserving the life and health of the mother and the child. The immediate animosity that somehow I do this from, I couldn't care less. That I just wanted my 2 cents to be spoken. It's not fair.
No, it's not that we're saying that you don't care. You clearly do. You have support groups set up to help a lot of women, and that's not what I'm saying at all. And I'm sorry if you misunderstood that. What I am saying, and the crisis pregnancy centers are a great thing, and I don't agree with pro-choice people who would go and try to have them shut down. I think that's ridiculous. But there are extremists on either side of the debate. There are those who would bomb abortion clinics, and there were those who would bomb crisis pregnancy centers. Not bomb, but shut down, or whatever. But the point is that for someone to sit there and say you were raped, and it's better for you to carry the child through term and then want to advocate against abortion, says to me that you're taking away that choice after the rape, and then you're saying to them, well, you know what, it's still a life, and it kind of sucks that it happened to you, but it's still a life. That's all I'm trying to say. I'm not saying you don't care. I'm not saying that you don't, that there are people out there who don't, who are pro-life and then don't do anything about it.
Well, yeah, then I hear you. But I would say, again, and on the blog for a while, she's since left and moved on to other things, doesn't blog with us anymore, but I had a woman who thought abortion was necessary in cases of rape, and I kind of wondered, well, what do I do with this? And we agreed that we would worry about the rape exemption when the 98% of abortions that are done for lifestyle reasons were eradicated. That's what we agreed. We're going to focus on the 98%. We're looking at the 98%. That's
right.
What we,
so, and I'm not, and I just want to be clear.
It's not my position, but we are at the fringe here. Now, the rape exemption is typically given when you've already uncovered that, oh my gosh, it really is a life and it is a human being, but now we have tough circumstances and we need to figure out how to grapple with those. So in a sense, discussing the rape or incest or tough exemptions, these really tough circumstances, it's already an admission on the part of pro-choice advocates that we have a situation here where we willingly and wantonly kill our children.
But is it really our children if they weren't something we wanted in the first place? If it was a pregnancy through rape, it's not something you've planned. It's not.
Yeah, but this is my point: is what logic, what philosophy, what reason, what reasonable person looks at the same thing and says that based on wantedness, it is two different things.
What's it? It's not a matter of looking at it as wantedness. It's a matter of, if somebody is thrust into a situation that they did not ask for and that they did not want to be in, and we do not give them any options to get out of said situation until 9 months down the road, when they've already
said that it's not a solution.
I'm saying that abortion is not a contraceptive solution. It's not a solution for lifestyle choices. It is not a solution to just go around, have sex willy-nilly, and then have an abortion later because it's there. That's what I mean by abortion not being a solution.
You admit that that is what is happening today?
I admit that there is a small percentage of people who do that. And those types of people maybe shouldn't be raising kids in the first place.
But that is not just a small proportion of our abortions.
But well, we can agree to disagree on that point, because I don't know if there's statistics out there that we can find that say, yeah. But the whole point is, if you're thrust into a situation that you don't want to be in, you didn't plan to be in, and it wasn't your choice to be in, apply that to any other scenario. You're going to do everything you can to survive that situation. And if surviving that situation means you come out of it back to where you were when you started, why are we taking that away?
If we could get back just for a minute to the debate of abortion in general and leave aside the extreme cases just for a moment. We were discussing earlier the need that these pregnant women have for support. I think of Uville Center in Ottawa, for example. I'm a supporter of theirs, where young women can go to high school in the same building, have their little babies babysat. That's if their own grandparents or grandparents can't help. So I think there are ways of society, if the families of these young girls are failing them or their boyfriends are cowards and run away, that there's other groups in society that can help them, so no one who is pregnant will feel alone.
And I'm completely with both of you on that, and we need more groups like this. We need more advocate groups that help work with women where abortion isn't the first step in their policy. And I think that's a big misconception about places like Planned Parenthood, because it's really not a huge part of what they do. But in the end, again, it is a woman. It is her body. It is her decision. And that's how I see it.
Linked to that, Jason, I think is the topic of education. I think we agree in general that more information the better, which does bring up the topic of freedom of speech and expression. And I thought you would have brought up already, here we are in Carleton, with the controversy over pro-life groups. And were we going to comment on that?
Well, I can comment on it. I don't think it's right that we should be limiting the funding of pro-life groups. They have opinions just like anybody else has opinions, pro-life, pro-choice. I don't like the way the pro-choicers on campus and the Women's Center have treated the pro-life in the past, but in the same way, I don't agree with the pro-life method of trying to scare women away from abortion with the showing of aborted fetuses. I think, you know, show some tact and some tastefulness with what you're doing. Talk to women. Don't just try to scare them. It's become a fear campaign more than anything. But I don't think, in the interest of free speech, that anything should stop anybody else from expressing how they feel about a subject. And to come back to your point, or just to counterpoint something with you, you talk about more education within the school system, at home, within culture and society in Canada. How do you respond to people like the Pope in the Roman Catholic See who say, no, don't use contraceptives because it'll help spread AIDS, or it goes against the Bible, or any number of issues like that that have been brought up in the past 5-10 years with Benedict?
Okay, two issues there. If I could reply first briefly to the issue of contraception in the church. Well, we believe in promoting a natural family planning. There are natural ways that a woman can regulate her fertility with her husband. There are ways that they can, in some sense, control the number of children they'd like to have, but we want people to be as open as possible. So that gets into theology of the body and ways to educate women of natural ways of family planning. And on the issue of the debate on campus, you're obviously open-minded. You invited us to this discussion. Thank you. But now I've heard that the CUSA is contemplating having these referendum questions in the fall, that do you agree that all pro-life groups should be banned from campus? And this sounds to me like extremism and fascism.
And I agree with you there. And I think if anybody's listening to this, if the Carleton student body is listening to this, vote no when that referendum, if it comes to question, because it's freedom of speech. If you want it for one side, you have to have it for all sides.
I think that's the reasonable position. I'm glad to hear you say that. So let's hope and pray and work toward this openness on campus, because it is a university.